You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialised fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. Our current serial is Cabaret of Monsters. This is a prequel novella to the Creature Court trilogy. Cabaret of Monsters is available for sale right now in ebook and paperback and audiobook form. If you want to listen to it without these little interjections by me, by all means, you can get it on nearly any audio platform. And all three books of the Creature Court trilogy are available now for pre-order. They'll be released on the 14th of February 2019. So if this has whetted your appetite, I think you'll like the full trilogy. It's a little darker than my the fiction I generally tend to share on here. But I think one of the reviewers referred to it as brutal. But it is my take on epic fantasy. I'm very proud of it as a work. Okay, I do still have some Saturnalia facts for you, even though it's past Twelfth Night. It is past Saturnalia as well. But I'm going to share them with you because when else am I going to get to talk about this stuff? Okay, so the Saturnalia fact for today is that during the festival, one person would be nominated as the king of Saturnalia and would order everyone around in a presumably hilarious manner. This is an early version of the Lord of Misrule from English medieval Christmas custom, or the Scottish equivalent, the Abbot of Unreason. Now, I recently watched the Christmas special of Upstart Crow, which is a sitcom about William Shakespeare, and they actually did do the Lord of Misrule, and they showed how that was, you know, done in a family context. And actually, it's not nearly as funny as the person being the Lord of Misrule thinks it is. Meanwhile, the Abbot of Unreason can go down as one of those phrases that, why is that not a Doctor Who story? It seems to me like it should be. All right, that's enough from me. Please enjoy the next chapter of Cabaret of Monsters. Chapter 9. One knocks before the Ides of Saturnalis. Dusk. Evie returned to the boarding house, her thoughts a confused jumble of insights about the man who was variously called the Orphan Princel, the stage master, himself, and poet. She had to stop letting these people tangle her further into their lives. She had one task here in Alfleur. Terrifying as he was, Garnet was her mission, not the theatricals. When she let herself into her room, Evie found the wolves waiting for her. They splayed out on her bed, tongues lolling, eyes lidded and heavy, two of them slender and deadly. The second the door snapped shut behind her, they came alert, blazing gold irises holding her in place. "There's no need for games," Evie said, tired and wanting to take her shoes off. "I know who you are." "Lavilla's different," Garnet had said. "Different how? If Wolf and Gattopardo and Bat were normal, then what did different mean?" The wolves fell into each other, became one larger wolf, all haunch and hackle. Her lip curled up into a growl that reverberated across the antique floorboards. Evie had faced down worse than this. She used to cover debutante balls back in Loudonan. The aunts at those things were the most vicious creatures she'd ever encountered. She stepped further into the room. "There's no need to hide," she said. The wolf shifted into bare human flesh. Lavilla's perfect face still wore exquisite cosmetic, framed by her black bobbed hair. Her clothes did not come with the change, but the lip paint did. How did that even work? Lavilla made no move to dress herself, though it was freezing in here. It might be nearly noon, but Evie could feel the Saturnalis chill through her boots and the tweed coat that wasn't quite enough to keep winter at bay. Lavilla's naked belly was unmarked. There was no sign of the wounds that had almost killed her so very recently. Had they almost killed her? Or was this some wolf and flapper game that Evie wasn't in on? "What happened to you?" Evie blurted. Lavilla gave a twisted smile, creasing her bright red lip paint. "That's a long story." "I'd like to hear it." "Oh, no. You won't see my dirty laundry scattered over the Alfleur Gazette, or whatever muckraking rag you write for. All the newspapers, admitted Evie. Evander X's stories are syndicated across more than a dozen papers, across Amoria, Inglira and beyond. Poet made you a stellar, but I could make you famous. Evie wasn't making the promise because she intended to keep it, though she could. It would be great fun. She was more interested in how Lavilla reacted to the promise of fame and fortune. Lavilla laughed, hard as glass. The Dem who turned into wolves, she quipped. I'm not a novelty act for your amusement, Inglira. I never said you were. Evie took a step closer to the naked woman. Lavilla was spectacular with her clothes off, all curves and angles. She should be painted with a vase and a flower crown. She should hang on the walls of a museum. She could eat Evie alive. What are you? Evie asked softly. Lavilla took a step of her own, closer. What are you? She countered. I see you. Cuddling up to Kip and Ruby Red's crowd like they're your new best friends. There's something off about you. I know how people work and you're... She narrowed her eyes. An outsider? Evie suggested. A liar takes one to know one. Lavilla took another step closer, her bare breasts almost brushing the lapels of Evie's embroidered coat. What are you looking for here in Alfleur? Evie considered telling Lavilla the same story she had left with himself, the thread she cast at him in the hope it would get back to Garnet. It was too late now to make a decision about that because Lavilla was kissing her. She laid her arms in a lazy sprawl around Evie's shoulders and leaned in, her bright carmine mouth opening, tasting. Evie kissed back. She had no defence against a beautiful woman in her arms. They necked slowly, bodies warm against each other. Honestly, why wasn't Lavilla cold? Only a scrape of teeth made Evie pull back. She had heard many rumours about the secret people of Alfleur, the ones who changed into lions and wolves and Gattopardo, it seemed. One of those rumours was that they drank blood. I lost someone, Evie blurted, kiss drunk, and starting to panic as the very calm Lavilla leaned back to observe her. I think she came here to Alfleur. Thousands of people come here, said Lavilla. It's a famous city of prosperity and wonder. People get lost on the streets of Alfleur every day. She licked her lips very deliberately, as if to imply she was the reason they got lost. Lover? Sister, Evie admitted. Lavilla's expression did not change. How long ago? 10 years. Oh, sweetie, what took you so long? I was a child, Evie said. We were both children. She was supposed to be travelling with an aunt. So unreliable. Aunts. Neither of them were ever heard of again. But you think your sister came here? I had a postcard a year ago, Evie insisted. Hardly anything at all. A picture of the Vittorina Royale and unsigned, but I knew it was from her. She wanted me to know she was alive, that she made it out of whatever took her from us. She always wanted to be an actress when we were children. Mama would never have allowed that. I thought this was a place to start, at least. Did she sound desperate enough? Hopeless enough? Lavilla moved away, all business. She picked up a fallen silk robe from Evie's bed, which hadn't been there this morning, another of Ruby Red's glamorous collection, which were flung all around the boarding house like a cat shedding fur. I wouldn't get my hopes up if I were you, Lavilla remarked. What was her name, this sister? Kenlis, said Evie. But we called her Kelpie. She was watching for it, or she would never have seen the brief second in which Lavilla froze. The story took hold. Never heard of her, Lavilla said airily, lying through her teeth. So many theatres across Amoria. We're a decadent sort of place. If you can't find her in the big city, try a coastal town or two. Small communities, cheaper tickets. That's where the dregs wash up. I'll keep that in mind, said Evie. and wiped Lavilla's lip paint from her own mouth. Lavilla's betrayal was efficient. 2 hours later, Evie was kidnapped. First, she typed up the latest frivolous column to drop into Jardin Falcone's paper when she had a minute, capturing the atmosphere of the matinees she had endured with himself all day, with a few gossipy hints about the audience and the anticipation of the city's Saturnalia theatre season. She never got a chance to file the story. The moment she set foot outside her door in search of tea and company, she was attacked. They slammed into her from behind, shoving a sack over her head and holding her arms. Evie forced herself to only struggle a little, and then fell limp as they carried her down the stairs out of the boarding house. "I don't like this," muttered the voice of a youth. "Aye, and we know that well enough," shot back an older man, with an accent from Evie's side of the Orcadian Strait. "The rest of us are clearly having a whale of a time." "Don't talk," said a woman, in a low, serious voice. "You'll give too much away." Evie let out an oof as she was tipped into a handcart of some kind and felt the ground rattling behind her. She stayed limp, doing her best to pretend she was a sack of potatoes. She had places to be. They travelled for a while, sometimes bumping her over a surface not meant for a handcart, then rattling along a much smoother path. It was colder now, and damp. Even through the blindfold she could tell it was darker than before. Here was one story she had heard, about the sinister creatures who made Alfleur more dangerous than any other city. They lived underground. Was she finally about to discover the truth behind the fairy tale? The cart tipped, and Evie hit the hard ground. She felt grit under her palms and a sticky dampness to the paving stones. Sturdy fingers worked into the knots behind her scalp, releasing the blindfold. Evie sat up, hanging on to what was left of her dignity. Two men in thick brown cloaks loomed over her, one short, craggy and threatening, the other young and pretty enough to dance alongside Christoph on stage. "Why am I here?" she asked, keeping things polite for now. There'd be time enough to stick a hat pin in one of them and run like hells. She always had a pin or two on her person for such an occasion, though she rarely bothered with hats. "You've been asking too many questions, so you have," said the shorter one, in a voice more Islander than Inglieran, but familiar all the same. Evie raised her eyebrows. "You're a long way from home, son. And asking questions is literally the job of a newspaper dem. Do you kidnap us by the dozen and keep us locked up in one of your..." She glanced around the area, which looked like some grim underground warehouse, without a barrel of Imperium or a crate of apples to be seen. "I suppose dungeon is the word I'm looking for?" Someone had gone to a lot of trouble to make this dump look grand. Lanterns hung from a balconied roof above a boxy warehouse built into the round walls. Swords and daggers were pinned up and down on every surface, always in pairs. A swish of red satin hung in front of the doors. Iron hooks ran along a lower archway, with clothes draped from them, fine theatrical clothes, all silks and leather. A fancy dungeon, with pretensions of grandeur, but a dungeon, nevertheless. It smelled like dead air and rodents. "Like to talk, don't you?" The islanders marvelled. "Are you not worried what we might do to you?" "Oh," said Evie, giving him a chilly look, "I don't imagine you're in charge." "I have a question," said a voice from directly behind her. It was a dem. The same demoiselle who had spoken when Evie was being trundled about like baggage. Evie stayed very still. The dem moved into sight, walking slowly to stand beside her companions. She wore a brown cloak too, with a rough outfit of trews and a shirt beneath. Finally, another dem in this city willing to wear trousers. "What's your question?" Evie asked, though she had a feeling she'd already guessed the substance of it. "Who the hell are you?" snarled the dem, hand hovering over her belt as if she expected to find a dagger waiting for her to grasp. I'm Kelpie. It's not short for anything, and you are not my sister. This, of course, was the problem with being a professional liar. Sooner or later, the story's caught up with you. No, said Evie calmly, allowing her gaze to hold Kelpie's. I'm not your sister. Then why would you say...
Peace, Kelpie, said the Islander, their leader.
Garnet said not of an interrogation. Do you do everything Garnet says? Evie asked. None of them replied to that, but their expressions were everything. They were guards of some kind, these three, bodyguards perhaps. Why did a man who could turn into a beast require bodyguards? They held themselves as if their entire function was to stand between a person with a weapon and a person who paid them. Not one of them carried a weapon. Why are there so many swords on the walls and none in your belts? Evie asked aloud. Mind your own business, said the Islander gruffly. Clearly this was a sore point. Knowing where to dig at sore points was a skill that Evie prided herself upon, and one which often reaped better rewards than the lying. Are they your swords? Shut your face. Laughter echoed through the dank cavern. Human laughter. Though the figure who leapt onto the railing of the balcony and prowled across its edge was Gattopardo entirely. The big cat made a leap to the stairs and shaped himself human as he walked. Garnet, naked and brazen as an actor backstage, reached out and took a silk kimono from the hooks as he reached the floor, wrapping his body. Answer the demoiselle's question, Macready, he said in a tone that could only be a threat. Are they your swords? No, my majesty, said the Islander, his eyes on the ground. His hand twitched, and Evie saw for the first time that it had been mutilated. His ring finger was missing, and there was an ugly twist of pink scarring left behind that twisted his entire hand. Crane, are they your swords? No, my power, said the younger man, also staring at the ground. Evie looked from one to the other, her gaze finally settling back on Kelpie. I want to know why she said she was my sister, Kelpie said angrily. Unlike the others, she did not treat Garnet as if he were about to whip her. Garnet raised his eyebrows. Well, Muckraker, is Kelpie remotely important to the story you spun around us? No, said Evie. She gave Kelpie a half shrug. I wanted to catch his attention. I'd apologize, but you just hit me over the head and kidnapped me, so I'm not feeling overly friendly. Maybe in a year or two we can laugh about it over drinks. She ignored the furious Dem, turning back to Garnet. You'll want the rest of our conversation to be private. He prowled around her, keeping his distance as he circled her. Clearly he was used to having these cloaked servants stand between himself and anyone he didn't trust, or he wouldn't come so close. Will I want that? The best thing about eavesdropping was that you found out people's hidden weaknesses, and no one ever thought it happened to them. There's something wrong with La Villa, Evie told him. Garnet went very still, his face hard as a statue. What have you heard? Nothing you'll want the others to know about. He hesitated only a moment, and then dismissed the brown cloaks with a wave. Get out. Majesty, said the Islander, Macready. How can we protect you? That's a good question, Garnet smirked, all his attention on Evie. How can you protect me? What exactly is the point of sentinels without their shiny swords? I thank you for bringing me this baggage, and now you will leave me alone. The three of them left, conditioned to obey. My hands are still tied, Evie told her captor. I'm aware, said Garnet. Were you expecting to be treated kindly? Sadly for you, said Evie, I keep my tongue in my wrists. I can't tell you anything when I'm bound. Her wit amused rather than angered him. With all the confidence of a man who could shape into a big cat and maul her at a moment's notice, Garnet walked behind her and untied the ropes.
Glass of wine. Honey cake.
Thank you, said Evie. I'm thoroughly refreshed. I was splashed by a puddle or two when your friends were trundling me along in their handcart. That should see me through to breakfast.
Garnet's eyes narrowed. Tell me about Lavilla.
Don't you want to know how I found you? Evie asked. Don't you want to know how I know what you are? Clearly that enraged him, though he remained calm and polite. Garnet's fury was all in his eyes. No one knows what I am.
No curiosity at all. Really, your friend poet was right. People never ask interesting questions.
Garnet extended a hand to help her to her feet. His skin was warm to the touch, too warm, as if he ran a fever.
Lavilla has been acting differently ever since she agreed to take part in Poets Theatre bullshit. Ever since you came to this city.
Coincidence?
Evie shrugged. She might not be a mask or a tumbler, but she knew how to use artifice to cover her real intentions. She'd been doing it all her life.
Coincidence. I never met Lavilla until after she was introduced to all the fancy patrons of the theatre.
If you're right and she's changed somehow, it was before then.
How do you know that?
Ruby Red says Lavilla can't sing that well. This Lavilla, the one you're so worried about, she sings like an angel.
Like a saint playing an angel, or an angel playing a saint.
Lavilla can sing, said Garnet, looking almost offended on the dam's behalf. She has a pretty voice.
Does she have a magnificent voice? A trained voice? A voice that could shatter glass and win the hearts of heroes and fill a theatre full of posh knobs with money to burn?
Evie challenged him. Garnet hesitated. I knew I was better at asking questions than you were.
Evie moved away from him, meandering around the great empty space like a tourist taking in the sights. She stopped to peer at the costumes hung on hooks. She paused by the staircase, as if she might head upstairs and nose around. She wandered around until she was directly beneath the wide array of swords and daggers, pinned to the wall, in pairs.
These are pretty. Are they trophies?
Something like that, said Garnet.
Are you suggesting that Lavilla is possessed in some way?
That someone replaced her?
Someone with a show-stopping voice?
Am I suggesting that? Evie asked in return. How should I know what's even possible around here? I'm not the one living in a dark underground world of fairy tales.
She reached up thoughtfully and tapped the tip of one of the daggers with her finger. It was sharp.
Don't touch those, said Garnet. What do you mean, fairy tales?
That's how I found you, said Evie.
Talk about questions unasked. You haven't even wondered how I know you can shape yourself into animals.
Gattopardo.
I assume you're not of the daylight, he said. There are other cities, other courts.
You belong to one of them, clearly.
Not one of the daylight. I don't even know what you mean by that, said Evie. I'm practically nocturnal these days.
As for courts, there are no courts in Loudoun, except that which our ruling duke commands, and it's mostly stuffy old gentlemen eating big meals and challenging each other to chess games.
But, said Garnet, and then he stopped. You found me.
I'm good at finding things, said Evie.
Mostly, I follow stories.
Once you know what to look for, there are a lot of clues to be found in Amorian folklore. Stories for children. About owls turning into women. Princes becoming ponies. Pretty men drinking blood. Invisible swords, that sort of thing.
She reached out and tapped the point of another dagger. This one fell into her hand too deep. It should have drawn blood. She felt nothing but a light buzz against her skin, like the soft flutter of a bee passing by.
Interesting.
There are no stories about us, said Garnet scornfully. About the old war, perhaps, but not any more.
No one knows!
And yet, I found you, said Evie.
All I had to do was follow the right story, plant the right seed, Here I am in a secret underground city that shouldn't exist. She gave her arms a bit of a flourish. I'm very good at what I do.
Writing stories, Garnet scoffed.
Trashy tales for sex-starved readers. Profiles of ordinary, boring daylight people with humdrum lives.
Evie tapped her fingers thoughtfully against the dagger on the wall. The one nearest to her, its hilt wrapped in blue leather. The hilt was solid enough, but the blade... The blade was as insubstantial as air.
She'd never seen anything like it.
Someone had once told her a story about a knife like this.
Selling stories pays the bills, she informed her kidnapper. But it's not actually what I do, in the vocational sense.
What's that supposed to mean? Garnet demanded, his voice rising. Step away from that wall.
Evie turned to face him, smiling a wide and welcoming smile, her best smile.
It's important to love your work, she told him, and her hand moved fast. She seized the impossible knife, flipped it in her hand and threw it with a speed and strength that the man never saw coming. Garnet's eyes widened as the knife drove into his throat, and he fell to the ground, in a crumpled heap of limbs and silk kimono.
Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.